Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another Science Studio program. My name is Keith Pannell, and I'm here with a guest today from Dundee, Scotland. That's where they make a lot of marmalade, by the way. But he's in the College of Life Sciences at the University of Dundee. His name is Andrei Nikolaev. Doesn't sound very Scottish to me, but Nikolai, welcome to Science Studio.
Thank you very much. How do you do?
I'm doing.
Hello, everybody.
Let's go to Andrei. How on earth did you get from, obviously, from Russia in the beginning to Dundee, and what got you into science in the first place? So let's have a little bit of autobiographical entertainment.
Well, you see, I was born in Moscow, Russia, and got my education in Moscow State University, who was excellent at that time, and it's still very good. I have a lot of friends there. After that, when I was at school, it was feeling that if you're interested in some sophisticated things, it's nice to go to the university. And obviously, I was interested in some chemical things later on, very much in biological processes or biochemical processes. And chemistry department, it was a great time. But that probably could be said by everybody who remember his first independent from family years.
Yeah, right.
Correct? So you are just belongs to your friends, to yourself. And
but, I mean, when you were in what we will call here high school,
yeah,
you had a very sophisticated, as you put it, education that you specialized in sciences from the age of 11 or something like I did in England.
No, I can't say so.
Ah.
I can't say so. So the high school or secondary school, yeah, so we started 10 years, so first class, year of 7 years old, so obviously being 16, 17 years old, so I graduated my school, or if you wish to say secondary school. And after that, I went to the university. When I was at school, it was traditional education, but well-balanced, I would say, education. And I must say that I felt in love with science in very general. And the most what I loved, it was chemistry and physics. But chemistry more. I don't know why. I still like physics as well. But I loved chemistry, and I decided why not to try to go to the chemistry department. It's not like in, for example, Britain. So you can go to the university with marks which you have after the school. So in Russia, to go to the university in that time, and it's changing a little bit now, but in that time you have to pass extra exams. And the exams were quite sophisticated. So if you pass these exams, so yes, you are accepted to the great university in the country. If you're not passing this exam, so you may try some other institution. So, but yeah, I was
like the military or something like
not
that.
Not necessarily, because, right. You know, there were other chemistry institutions, for example, Institute of Fine Chemical Technology, which quite a few really very good Soviet chemists graduated.
So Moscow State would be at the pinnacle of what was available to study science
yes.
in those days.
Yeah, right. That's true.
So anyway, you got your degrees. What was your thesis on? What sort of research did you do as a student?
So in Russia in that time, and still we have five-year university education. It's like in Europe, like in Germany, like in Italy. And I believe that this is good. It's not like, you know, 3 years, because I teach now students in Scotland. In Scotland, we have four-year education. I know that very traditional for British system, three-year education. And to get university graduate in 3 years requires a lot of work from the students. Modern population of students don't like to do that. But back to my young years, you know, just we got 5 years, so it was just step by step. We studied inorganic chemistry, we studied analytical chemistry, we studied organic chemistry, physical chemistry, and obviously it was also physics, maths. We got very, very broad education. So my diploma thesis on the fifth year, it was actually already in quite attractive in that time, nucleotide chemistry. So I synthesized very short fragments of DNA, just trying to introduce novel methodology for coupling two nucleosides through the phosphodiester bond. And I remember that was time when Hobend Korana was a god, a tsar, and he just synthesized chemically a gene. And great papers were published, and we knew Korana's papers, and we read them, and we tried just to think what we can do to improve this stuff. That was, let's say, not very beginning of the nucleotide.
But I mean, but that's a big project to make a gene. But I mean, a lot of people do what they call oligos, you know, just small little segments.
That's what I did. I think as far as I remember, I synthesized trinucleoside triphosphate, so trimeric fragment of a gene. That was great fun.
Well, it is, but I had friends up at the NIH, a young lady from Hungary. And she was making oligos. That was what she was doing. And we did some collaboration. But she'd show me a sample. You know, I deal with crystals. I deal with 30 milligrams is very little. And she had – I couldn't see anything. I said, well, how do you know there's anything there?
It's probably 1 or 2 milligrams. Yeah. And the color was brown.
Well, no, this was colorless. But she'd put it into, you know, different instrumentation. Yeah. She'd see rotations and the
UV,
like.
UV spectrum.
Right, yeah.
Which is typical.
And then she'd say, oh, well, then I've got what I want.
Exactly.
And I was amazed. Exactly. But anyway, so you did this.
Exactly. Yeah, I did it. I was in a very good group in Moscow University who actually synthesized this.
Yeah. Well, tell me why people make them. Why is anybody interested in having three nucleotides?
Well, you probably heard about genomics and genome, which was cracked down a few years ago.
Right.
And that's exactly where it did it come from. And remember 1953, Watson-Crick theory, the first knowledge of the DNA.
Yeah, but why would people make just these small little segments? Tell the audience.
Well, because through this, you can do gene engineering, molecular microbiology, molecular biology, recombinant synthesis of DNA fragments, and that will come later, or coming later, actually, to synthesis of the proteins. What we start, not we, of course, yeah, but people started in that time with the synthesis of the short oligonucleotides. Now, then it came to procedure developed by Marvin Carruthers, which is called phosphoramidite approach. And now you can actually buy deca-nucleotide with the price something about $9 per mononucleotide.
But what do people do with these?
That enormous things to present world of biochemistry and molecular biology. So these short oligonucleotides are vital if you would like to make what's called recombinant enzymes. Recombinant enzymes, you force biological system, like, for example, Escherichia coli, synthesize something which is not typical for Escherichia coli. But you have to put priming fragment, this nucleotide, with a very special structure. And in that time, probably when people tried to make synthesis back in 60s and 70s, they didn't know how it will come later on. I would say that the whole present biochemistry, molecular biology, cell biology, life sciences, based on that findings of structure and chemical synthesis of the oligonucleotides, which has been started actually not by Khorana, but even by Lord Todd back in 50s in the UK.
So the point is these little fragments, these little 3, 4, 5, 10, whatever,
you can
insert them into the genetic makeup of bacteria force these little
bacteria
buggers to produce things that you're interested in.
To produce proteins.
Proteins.
To produce proteins.
And
these
proteins can be used for?
Can be used for various things. They can be used for preparation of vaccines, conjugates, just starting some biological process. So that's amazing. If to look at the beginning, and we have now what we have now.
Oh, absolutely.
It's unbelievable. But people simply, of course, present generation, they don't remember how it started. They don't remember how important chemistry was at the beginning. But that was chemistry, which is actually clicked.
From the beginning to the end is always an amazing when you can look back.
Yeah. And this is just 50 years.
Well, take a freshman chemistry book. I don't know if you've seen any freshman chemistry books lately, but the first chapter is usually 2.54 centimeters equal 1 inch, transfer centigrade to Fahrenheit, and the last chapter is how to build a nuclear bomb. It's incredible range of possibilities.
That's unfortunately, because organic chemistry actually was originated in Germany in the 19th century, and that came to chemical warfare.
Oh, that's right.
In World War I and much more in World War II.
Yeah, I remember. Anyway, I actually don't remember. I remember reading about it, but I wasn't there.
Course,
Tell us a little bit. You obviously then landed up in Scotland. That was a big jump, but it's very typical of scientists moving. I'm from England. I land up in West Texas.
Yeah.
You're from Moscow. You're in Dundee.
Yeah.
What are you doing now in Dundee?
What I'm doing now in Dundee, I work for the College of Life Sciences, and I'm still doing chemistry. So I'm organic chemist, not very much involved in the nucleotide chemistry. I'm doing carbohydrate chemistry, so that's my specialty. But
carbohydrates are things like sugars, just to put it out there.
Yeah, carbohydrates, sugars, polysaccharides, but also we have structures which are called phosphoglycans, so we're still doing chemistry of the phosphates, which obviously is present in nucleic acids as well. So my present research involved in the chemical synthesis of important biological molecules from protozoan parasites like Leishmania and Trypanosoma, Trypanosoma brucei, which is African trypanosome, Trypanosoma cruzi, Latin American
and trypanosome. And these are parasites that have some nasty impact on
they,
people.
Yeah, they cause very nasty diseases.
Right.
Very nasty diseases. And studies, I would say, it's practically no well-established drugs against these diseases because the drugs either quite expensive or doing nasty effects to human liver and spleen, or doing both.
Yeah, right.
And to solve this problem on the molecular biology level, that would be great. So in Dundee, we have very strong drug discovery unit, which was created a few years ago, probably about 5 years ago. So they're doing this drug discovery for neglected diseases.
Right.
Why neglected? Because big pharma's not much interested.
Because there's not enough money to be made.
Yeah, it is.
And Mike Ferguson is the director of that
institute. Mike Ferguson. He's not director of drug discovery, but Professor Mike Ferguson, right. He's head of Dean of Research in our college.
He was on Science Studio a few years ago, in fact.
Yeah, he's collaborating with Dr. Igor Almeida from this university. And also just we have very nice collaboration. He is excellent biochemist and with very good understanding of chemistry. So what we do in chemistry laboratory, we create these big biological molecules, let's say fragments of these molecules. Why we are doing this? Because on the one point of view, it's a big challenge. Like when Horana synthesized the gene, he did not know how it will implement molecular biology later on. But it's a big challenge for chemists, whether we can do that or not. And when we're doing this chemically in the lab, so inevitably it's supposed to be, it should be involved development of some novel methodologies. On the other hand, the compounds which we synthesized, we do not store for ages or throw away. So we're doing them on purpose to get new biological knowledge. Because we synthesize these fragments with direct application in certain biochemical experiments or immunological experiments or, let's say, formation of glycoconjugates, which could be used as potential vaccines. So that's our target. And study of some bisynthetic enzymes.
A glycoconjugate. This is then you've got your polysaccharide or your carbohydrate or whatever, and you have an extra molecule or an extra structural feature added to it.
Correct.
Well, what's the function of that? Why do you need both the saccharide and the addended portion?
So the another part, it's normally a protein. Because if you do vaccination just with the polysaccharide or oligosaccharide part, it's actually not effective enough from your immunology point of view.
It's not specific enough.
It could be specific because the specificity sits with the oligosaccharide part. Specificity there. But immunological memory is very, very short. So we do not produce antibodies in a great amount, and these antibodies simply do not survive in our system, in mammalian system. So we need to make, first of all, big molecular mass of these conjugates. And secondly, we have to provide compounds which is known if it coupled to the protein, so it will give quite long immunological memory. So that's quite well known. So that's very important for the conjugation. So
we'll come back to that in a moment. You're listening to Science Studio. My name is Keith Pannell. I'm here with Andrei Nikolaev from the University of Dundee College of Life Sciences. We shall be back.
Welcome to Medical Discovery News. I'm Dr. David Niesel.
And I'm Dr. Norbert Herzog. For you aspirin believers, a new study now says an aspirin a day keeps the cancer away.
Well, it doesn't quite say that, but comes pretty close. The study examined 8 clinical trials and found people who took a daily low-dose aspirin for 4 years reduced their chances of dying from many common cancers by 44%.
Another study showed aspirin's remarkable effects on people with hereditary colorectal cancer. Those who took high doses of aspirin daily for 2 years lowered their chances of developing the disease by 60%.
Despite these findings, no medical group is making a formal recommendation for people to start taking aspirin daily because none of the large studies were designed to specifically assess aspirin's effects on cancer in general.
Plus, doctors hesitate to tell presumably healthy people to start taking aspirin regularly when the drug carries side effects such as gastrointestinal bleeding.
But it's getting hard to ignore all the evidence pointing to aspirin's potential to prevent cancer. A 2010 British study showed taking aspirin for 5 years lowered by more than 20% a person's risk of dying from esophageal, stomach, pancreatic, brain, lung, and prostate cancers.
Aspirin works by inhibiting the activities of an enzyme called cyclooxygenase, which creates an inflammatory environment in the body that can promote tumor growth.
A new guideline for aspirin therapy suggests starting a daily regimen at age 50 and stop at 70 to reduce the risk of internal bleeding. But talk to your doctor first.
We are Drs. David Neisel and Norbert Herzog at the University of Texas Medical Branch and the Frank H. Netter School of Medicine at Quinnipiac University, where biomedical discoveries shape the future of medicine. For much more on this and our disclaimer, go to medicaldiscoverynews.com.
Welcome back to Science Studio. Keith Pannell here with Andrei Nikolaev from the University of Dundee. The interesting concept for a lot of people, I'm sure, is this concept of the memory of the body with respect to a species. You know, you're saying that the memory for
immunological memory, yeah.
But for a polysaccharide, it's short. But when you stick on a proteinaceous sidearm, so to speak, yeah, then the memory is long.
Yeah.
Explain that in simple terms.
I can't.
Okay. All right. Next question.
Look, I'm a chemist. A chemist who started from very basic organic chemistry.
Okay. So you were told.
Immunology is a very sophisticated science.
Okay.
So immunological people can tell much better about it. So I don't.
But you believe it anyway.
Well,
there's something in the way that's quite well established
concept.
So there's something about having the protein there that causes a cascade of events and biochemical syntheses to make sure that the body remembers.
Generation of antibodies.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, we'll do another program with somebody else. So, what question should I ask you next then that you have an answer to?
I don't know.
Well, the molecules you're making, then, you're trying in the end, I suppose, like most people in this game, the sort of holy grail is some form of vaccines against leishmaniasis, for example.
Let's say. I tell you what, we synthesized already some glycoconjugates chemically, which has been tested in mice infected with Leishmania mexicana, and it was quite substantial protective.
You mean you put the parasites into the mouse?
So the first, they were vaccinated with our glycoconjugates.
Right.
And glycoconjugates contained saccharide fragment, and tetanus toxoid protein molecule. And mice were conjugated. The immunology itself has been done by our collaborators in the University of Liverpool. And they immunized mice, and then these mice were infected with parasite, Leishmania mexicana, and some protective effect was found. So that's actually...
Well, what do you mean by some protective? I mean, it took them 4 days to be infected as opposed to 4 hours or weeks. I mean, what's the level of protection that you get? And what is the level that we need?
Oh, it's a good question.
Okay.
I don't remember exactly, but I think actually that because Leishmania mexicana causing quite nasty source.
Yes.
Yeah. And so the size of source was significantly smaller when the mice were protected. That's how our partners tested this.
So protection is in the eye of the beholder. You still get the problem, but it's not as great as it would have been.
It's not as bad, yeah.
Which is the first time that had been demonstrated by...
I would say for Leishmania conjugates, yes, that first time was demonstrated.
So what do you do next then? Do you change the protein in your glycoproteins, or Do you change the saccharide part?
That's a typical question from a scientist. Yeah.
Right.
I would say it's probably will be some continuation of this project. That's an opportunity. Yes, we may change a chemical part. But as I said, this chemistry fragment is responsible for the specificity. And what we have, it's exactly fragment of the Leishmania Mexicana natural native phosphoglycan.
Right.
So we're doing molecules which are native, or their fragments, or their analogs. And changing of the protein
from and that work is done by other people. I mean, other people have been able to demonstrate that particular molecular structure.
Immunologically.
And then you take their work and say, ah, this is the part of the molecule that's in leishmaniasis or in the parasite. Then we add that to the saccharide, which is your, that's what your strength is.
We created this oligosaccharide and added to the protein carrier, it's called.
Right.
Yeah. So that's actually, I would say, these glycoconjugates, this called synthetic vaccines, it's quite big hit right now.
Right.
Because it has been proved already that commercially it's fine, it's sustainable. So because you can provide synthetically glycoconjugate, which to be converted to as a vaccine, because some additives are required, will cost about $1-$2 per dose. And that what is how it's supposed to be to get financial sustainability.
So the cost is important.
Cost is important,
right.
But because the amount of this glycoconjugate is just micrograms, just micrograms. And even, for example, if kilogram of your carbohydrate part costs about $1 million, but we never make a kilogram. I mean, it might be necessary, But if you calculate these micrograms, that goes to very, very decent figures.
Just tell the audience and me, I mean, I know the answer, I'm sure, but how do you measure micrograms?
How I measure micrograms?
Yeah, how do you know you've got a microgram?
It's a good question. Obviously, you can't get your microgram on balance. But what you can do, you can, for example, measure milligrams, 5-10 milligrams, then make a solution.
Right.
Make dilution of this and then calculate through the dilution. So that's
And then to prove it, you can do spectroscopy.
Well, spectroscopically,
yes. Right.
You can do the spectroscopically in time when ultraviolet spectroscopy was very, very popular for nucleotides. Yeah, that was also possible. But, you know, quite a lot of saccharides, they simply don't have this chromophoric group, so we don't have UV spectra, so we have NMR, and NMR is not a method to measure the weight of this material.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but there are some other methods how you can do this liquid chromatography.
Basically, it's the dilution concept.
Yeah, right. Dilution concept. Yeah. It works.
You take an amount that you can accurately know and dilute it.
That we have micrograms per dose. Yeah.
So anyway, you've got these particular molecules that you've made. You've done work with your colleagues on mice.
Yeah.
What comes next? What is the next step?
No, let's say testing different protein carriers. That could be quite a good idea.
Tell us what you mean by a protein carrier.
Protein carrier, it's a protein which we use, as I said, so this oligosaccharide part linked chemically to this protein. So that's what we call protein carrier. But the important point that this protein should not do any harm to our body. So that protein should be, let's say, supportive, which we call adjuvant, supportive immune response, but not harming our body. It should be harmless. But yeah, there are some.
So, but my point, though, I'm trying to, for clarification, the sugar part, the carbohydrate, saccharide part.
Is responsible for specificity.
But not for transporting across membranes or anything like that. I mean, when you talk about carrier, and I'm always thinking drug delivery, for example.
No, drug delivery is a different story.
So carrier. What does it mean by carrier?
Carrier, it's carrying into our blood system.
What is carrying what? The protein carrier?
Protein carrying oligosaccharide, yeah. So that's called protein carrier.
So which is carrying which? Is the protein carrying the saccharide or the saccharide carrying the protein?
No, I think protein carrying the saccharide.
Okay. So the protein.
And protein obviously is bigger.
Yes.
Yeah? And you need to get certain balance between amount of this oligosaccharide per protein. So I think it's optimal.
Right.
You should get this your oligosaccharide per 10 or 12,000 dalton of protein mass. Yeah. So if you have 50,000 dalton, better to get something about 5 oligosaccharide units per disease.
What other systems, what other diseases, what other parasites are you sort of entertained by in your research?
It's all actually came from chemistry, because in my years when I was in Moscow, we developed quite interesting and effective approach to the chemical synthesis of the phosphosaccharide molecules of the bacterial origin. But the availability, chemical availability, it was no, let's say, availability of these molecules because methodology wasn't developed. But, you know, chemistry developing, and so we developed nice methodology, which first we applied to these Leishmania fragments because they are phosphosaccharides, phosphoglycans. And quite recently we have become involved in preparation of surface molecules from Trypanosoma, another parasite, African parasite, Trypanosoma brucei, and also Trypanosoma cruzi, which is Chagas disease,
Chagas disease in
Central America. So that's
and on the Rio Grande
for this area.
Right.
Yeah, so on the other shore of Rio Grande, so in Mexico, they have quite substantial amount.
Well, they have it here, and I'm told that in fact the blood supply in Los Angeles doesn't get screened for such parasites.
Oh, right.
And they claim that there's a better chance of getting Chagas disease from blood transformation in L.A. than it is from getting HIV, because we screen for one, but we don't screen for the other.
I see. Yeah.
But has there been any success you can tell us? Not necessarily your own work, but around the world in this approach that you're taking, you know, of these conjugate materials, where, in fact, a good vaccine has been developed for some particular issue, some disease?
So I can tell you, yes, of course. What we're doing for Trypanosoma cruzi and Trypanosoma brucei, so that we study some enzymes which are responsible for the biosynthesis of certain surface molecules. And for Trypanosoma brucei, it has been shown that biosynthetic pathway for the molecule which called glycosylphosphatidyl inositol.
Ah, I know it well, yes.
Name. So it must GPI.
I was going to say, it must be initials somewhere.
GPI,
so
yeah.
So famous GPI.
So biosynthetic pathway of the GPI from Trypanosoma brucei, African trypanosome, has been validated chemically and genetically as a drug target against sleeping sickness, tsetsefly.
So that was a purely an offshoot. Nobody expected this.
No, well, I don't say. But that's a Mike Ferguson expert in this area.
No.
So I would say nobody expected this 30 years ago.
Right, yes. I think we've got about a minute left. I'd just like to hear your opinion of living in Scotland compared to living in Moscow.
I would say Scotland is a wonderful country.
Yeah. Now you preferentially drink whiskey rather than vodka, or are you still a vodka person?
Every year I celebrate Christmas and New Year in Moscow. When I'm in Moscow, I drink vodka. And champagne.
You know,
Russian people drink
Georgian champagne, in fact, right?
Georgian wines.
Okay.
But champagne, it could be from Moldova, Ukraine, from...
Ah.
We have quite good production in...
I know, I drank it. I just didn't know where it came from.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've run out of time for real.
Champagne.
So, Andrei Nikolaev, University of Dundee, College of Life Sciences. Thank you very much for being here on Science Studio. Great fun. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
And thanks, Norma Martinez, for doing it all together and keeping us on track from time to time. We'll be back next week with another Science Studio. Bye-bye.
I'm Noemi Rojas with your Synapse Flash. With the help of South Korean researchers, the Chili Pepper Institute at New Mexico State University has cracked the chili pepper genome. This will mean accelerated efforts to breed improved cultivars. At the Institute, the focus will first be on examining the pepper's disease resistance to a problem growers called chili wilt. Read more in the region's Life Sciences News Digest. go to mcasynapse.org.